Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning.
Trying to think of an analogy for how to explain where this talk is going to come from or not. On Friday night, Cindy and I were supposed to go into the city in the Lower West Side to see a play, which is, I guess, I don't know if this is the right word, but it'll have to do, sort of an avant-garde interpretation of Macbeth. And it takes place in a five-story building in Lower Manhattan. The first floor is a restaurant and bar, but the play takes place on all the different floors. And apparently the audience can move from floor to floor at will. You can't talk to anybody, but the actors can talk to you. And so it unfolds. That's the best that I can explain. Well, that's sort of similar to this talk, because it's not a prepared talk. and it's probably going to go from floor to floor. But you're not allowed to talk. I have some notes that I took, but it's been a week where my brother's in the hospital with a serious heart condition, and some stuff happened at work, and then we had a snowfall, and so I never really did get to organize my thoughts and put this together as a talk. So I thought, just for my own practice, I should just wing it and see what happens. There's a couple of streams that feed this. One is, I think I've mentioned this before, but as a lay Zen teacher, as not a non-priest, a non-Buddhist, it used to be that if you weren't a priest, you couldn't teach the precepts. But in the lay Zen world, you can become a preceptor, which allows you to teach the precepts and have Jukai and the whole thing at the end. And so I've recently started studying the precepts with Sensei Ray. The initial precept is not to kill, not non-killing. The way that we take up the study of the precepts to become a preceptor is to look at it through three lenses: the literal, the compassionate, and the absolute. So anyway, so I've been doing that, and a lot of it has to do with asking yourself personally, how do I take life? And taking life is not always literal. It's not just killing in that sense, but can also be killing the spirit. What actions do I take in my life that kill the spirit, take life out of situation? And then another way to look at the precepts is, as opposed to non-killing, is the affirmation of life. What do I do on a daily basis to affirm life, to appreciate life? So that's one stream. Another stream is, Cindy and I saw a movie called Zero Dark 30. It's about the pursuit of bin Laden, which takes place over a period of about 12 years. It was the kind of movie that, it wasn't a Bruce Willis movie. I mean, there was a lot of ghastly stuff in the movie, but it wasn't, somehow when you go to see a Bruce Willis movie or an Arnold Schwarzenegger movie, you sort of know it's just a movie. This was very real. So that's another stream that feeds this. And then another stream was going to the lay Zen teacher's retreat recently. Part of the discussion was to look at a lot of the chants and the various rituals that we do with fresh eyes, and to see if there's any ways that it would be more appropriate to adapt it to Western practitioners. And we just chanted it this morning, but the Gatha of Repentance starts out, "All the evil karma ever created by me of old." And something recently was troublesome about the word evil. And I guess because I equated it to my Christian upbringing, and all, which is built around fear or something. And I don't even know if it's clear to me. So it had occurred to me, I was just toying with the idea, and I think I talked to Jeff about this, about changing the word evil to harmful. And then I saw this movie, and I realized what a mistake that would be. There is evil in the world, and every one of us is capable of creating evil. And so the tension or the power of that word is really, I think, very important when we do that chant. So this, the movie itself, the Zero Dark 30, which, by the way, refers to, in military time, zero is 12 o'clock, and dark makes it the a.m. So 0, dark, and 30 was 30 minutes after midnight, was when they attacked and killed bin Laden. But the movie starts out with some pretty gruesome torture scenes. And so it goes. And so, and then there was the woman who was, you know, just devoted 12 years of her life to chasing down bin Laden. She had no life. She had no relationship. She had no significant other. Her life was just devoted to this chase, as were this whole group of people that did this, including the people who perpetrated torture. And I was thinking about life and how, well, first of all, the activities that many of these people committed to chase down bin Laden were really evil. And it's sort of a crazy thing. You know, I'm sitting there and I'm watching this, and I'm looking through the lens of the precept and how not only does the person who tortures take the life of the person who's tortured, whether that person dies or not, I mean, you're never the same after those kind of experiences, how they take their own life by doing those kind of harmful acts. And it's certainly not an affirmation of life, that's for sure. And so this movie was this amalgam of non-affirming of life. Now, I know this is probably a political thing, and I don't mean it to be political. I just mean it to share my own, these streams coming together at one time. This isn't meant to create a debate about the politics and all of that. So I'm not looking at it or experiencing it from that point of view. I actually, believe it or not, felt a lot of compassion for the guy who was the torturer. I mean, he was alive physically, but he was dead in every other sense of the word. He had no spirit, and how that must be to be dead but still be breathing. And how complicated it is, you know, they show this scene at the end when the Navy SEALs raid this compound, and how heartlessly, I suppose from a military point of view, you could support why they had to do it this way. But if anybody got in the way, they were dead, and they made sure they were dead. And, you know, it's again like, certainly, you feel compassion for innocent bystanders, so to speak. But I also felt, again, compassion for these SEALs, the people who have devoted their life basically to becoming trained killers. And again, this is not meant to be political. It's just my own personal search to understand, to try and create some meaning or understanding out of all of this in terms of the precept, non-killing or affirming life. And somewhere in the middle of all this, I realized, which is probably obvious, but I realized that the heart of this was, you can only do this. You can only not affirm life. You can only take life if you are separate from it. If we create bin Laden, or we create Middle Eastern people, or whoever it is, as other, then we can create, or we can commit evil to other people, if they're separate from ourselves, and justify it. And in all this ugliness that I'm talking about, I realize the incredible beauty of this practice, which is to learn, not only intellectually, but through direct experience, have the experience of non-separation, of oneness. If you think about the analogy of this being one body, it's almost even unthinkable to want to cut off your hand. You know, it's one body. That's me. That's not something other than myself. At the same time, there's a natural inclination to want to take care of the different parts of this one body, because it's me. Nothing is left out. So in some sort of backhanded, crazy way, I had, again, another experience of deep appreciation for the practice of Zazen and the experiences that it allows us to have. There was a Rumi poem that I came across in terms of the one body. I know you've heard this before, but he writes, "The minute I heard my first love story, I started looking for you, not knowing how blind that was. Lovers don't finally meet somewhere. They're in each other all along." So to have that experience and create circumstances where others can have that experience is really how to work for peace, I think. He also writes, "Out beyond ideas of wrongdoing and rightdoing, there's a field, And he says, I'll meet you there. So I feel a need to ask, does this make sense? There's a, I'm going to end with this, I guess. There's a haiku by Basho. And he writes, midnight, no waves, no wind. The empty boat is flooded with moonlight. Thank you.